welcome everyone who's come out on this beautiful morning. I am beginning to believe a little bit that spring is coming. Maybe we'll get it by the time it's over. But anyway, no, it's beautiful out there today, and we're glad you're here. If you're visiting, we welcome you here. We want you to come back and be with us at every opportunity you have. Appreciate the kind words that Georgia gave us a moment ago, and let me join in and thank you. There were quite a few of you that reached out in some way to do something or express your sympathy for the loss of Jewel's mother, and we really appreciate that. And I want to read a card from Juliet. She quotes from 2 Corinthians 1, verses 3 and 4, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who comforts us in all our afflictions, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in any affliction with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God." To the brothers and sisters at East Orange, your support truly made a difference to me and my family during this difficult time. I ask that you continue to remember us in the coming days. With love, Juliet. And I personally, Montel and I personally appreciated everything that you've done. This morning we are going to go back to our theme, and after a very good session last Sunday, and I thank everybody for the questions, and most especially for the continued discussion that has been since last Sunday. We hope that those times like that will prompt further discussion in the have, and I'm grateful to you for that. But we're going to go back to our theme proper. We are talking about this year the idea of building an ark, what we can do, like Noah, to save ourselves, certainly, our loved ones, from the destruction that we see in the world. And in particular, this quarter, we're looking at the idea of building an ark at home or with our home. And this morning I want us to talk about maybe the fundamental concept in Scripture that has to do with the home, that is what parents and those who are older, not just parents, but certainly grandparents, etc., but what they pass on to the next generation. And so I want us to take a look at that. And we'll talk about then building an ark at home and the use of chastisement. Now I'll get very quickly into what that means. But let's start with this point. The home is where, or it is supposed to be where, respect for authority. And I really want that phrase to resonate with you this morning. Where respect for authority is learned. I'm not going to turn back there again, but we've looked at throughout this year so far. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. We all know it. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. Again, foolishness in verse 15 is bound in the heart of the child. And I've noted that term foolishness can also mean and is used in several contexts in the Bible that talks about the whole idea of rebellion. But that's what children do. Foolishness is bound in the heart of the child, but the rod of correction will drive it far from it. So we start talking about things like discipline and chastisement in order to teach the child, or maybe more properly, train the child in the way he should go. When we speak of discipline, technically speaking, let's just read some definitions. We speak of control. Again, foolishness is bound in the heart of the child. Rebellion is there. So we talk about control that is gained by enforcing obedience to a prescribed conduct. Now think about that. That's the definition that's being given in Webster's. Control is gained by enforcing obedience to a prescribed conduct or pattern of behavior. Again, if we looked at the Bible, the way of things. To bring that home, we are talking about parents basically telling children, this is the way of things. This is what you must do. This is how you must go. This is what you must do. These are the things you must do, etc. This is how you should be. And while you are in my home and you are growing up, it is my job given by God, it's my duty given by God to enforce that. And you're saying that plainly so that a child can understand that, and the child comes to understand that, And when we talk about chastisement, again, Webster's Dictionary, consequential punishment. So we're talking about consequences for disobedience. Consequential punishment or suffering and express favor for compliance. And you can be very simple by that. It starts off when a child is very, very young. And when the child does something good and right, and the parents say, good job, and all that kind of thing, that favor that is extended begins to impress upon the mind of the child, if I do good, I'm in this person's favor. And when you do something that's wrong, no, don't do that. It begins to impress equally upon the mind, when I do this, I'm out of favor. My parent does not like that, does not want that. And it is that simple mechanism that's instilled in us from the beginning that teaches us, again, respect for authority. When a person gains that from the home, it's an understanding that's carried throughout all of life in every situation. That whole idea of doing right gains favor. Of doing wrong brings disfavor or lack of that favor. And a lot of pain in life can be avoided if a person is properly disciplined at home. When we look at Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Colossians 3 would add, in all things, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And then it goes on to talk about the good life, the abundant life, the long life you can have if you do that. Honor your father and your mother. That respect, again, that is given for the authority of your parents. Obey them, respect them. They are your parents. I don't think that ever changes, actually. In the Lord would carry the whole idea of all your responsibilities as a little kid all the way to the day that certainly they die and beyond. But the idea is respect for authority. Now, statistics show, and I know that you know this, but statistics show that children coming from well-disciplined homes live far more settled, productive lives. I think we all understand that. Children that come from good homes, children that come from parents who did all of this, children who come from backgrounds where somebody was there to say, this is the way you need to go, and enforce that. They live settled lives, they live productive lives far more. And it is far less of a struggle to accomplish that when they come from properly disciplined homes. In fact, we could go on and look at statistics, and I'm not going to do that this morning. But much of the sadness, even criminal behavior, even the very breakdown in society, when we talk about the home being the basic building block of any society, a lot of that can be avoided, that breakdown, that, you know, the unrest that exists in people's lives, a lot of that can be avoided if children are raised like this by parents who teach them and correct them at home. I want you to go with me to Proverbs chapter 3. And I wish I had time this morning. I don't. But I'd go through every verse of Proverbs 3 and talk about how it relates to the home. But this is what Solomon said in the beginning in Proverbs 3. My son, notice this. My son, forget not my law. I love the way that the Bible says that. Because these are not suggestions. Okay? He is not saying to his son, I raised you, suggesting to you that you behave a certain way, but basically saying it's okay if you don't. No, it was my law. I laid it down. I enforced it. Don't forget it. Forget not my law, but let your heart keep my commandments. And then he adds that same promise from Ephesians 6. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Now there are a lot of discussions about what that means. But certainly one idea is the whole idea of being bound in the sense of, you know, enslaved to it, but willingly so. And here's the idea of bind them about thy neck, write them upon the tables of thine heart. In other words, keep them in your minds, in your hearts, your thoughts, all the time.
so that you shall find favor,
notice,
and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Now, in a nutshell, that's what raising children is all about. If I do my job when I raise my child, if I go back to discipline and chastisement in the middle of the slide there, if I enforce those rules, if I lay down that law, and we're going to go further with that, that what should be involved in laying down that law. But if I do that, and I train that child up in the way he should go, notice what God is saying here. Note through inspiration what Solomon is telling his son. If you hold on to that, you're going to have favor in the sight of God and man. Now let's go a little further with that. And I'll make it practical. I just want you to think for a moment. I put up just a little bit of what we could talk about for a couple of hours. But if boys and girls were taught by example from childhood, you notice what I say there. There's consistency there between parents and children. If they were taught by example from childhood to love their spouse, be devoted to their spouse. If respect for a woman was taught, you don't hit a woman. What a problem we have in our society right now with these great, big, giant men beating on these women. You don't hit a woman. And my dad drilled that into me. I had a sister that was always trying to pick at me and get me in trouble. You don't hit a woman. Dad would come to me if I fall back, if I hit her or whatever. I can remember this from being a little bitty kid. You get two spankings for this. One for doing what you did, and one for hitting a girl. I thought, that ain't fair. You know, Dad said, you're going to be a big guy someday. You don't hit a woman. If the meaning of work and providing for the family was expected, you're going to grow up, you're going to get a job, you're going to provide, you're going to take care of your family. If reverence for the leadership of dad was insisted upon, I'd get you to go home and watch an old movie written by a lady from my home state of Alabama, Wes's home state, Harper Lee. It's called To Kill a Mockingbird. A lot of you know that. There's a great movie that was made, 50 plus years ago now, a great movie that was made. And in the courtroom scene, the kids are up in the balcony. They're sitting up in the balcony, and in walks their dad with the client he's representing. Old man looked at the kid and said, stand up, children. Your dad is passing. That kind of respect for the leadership, the sacrifices that dad made. If the well-being of children, I love my child, I care for my child at all costs. If the well-being of children came with a sacrifice of personal pleasure and fulfillment, not it's about self-fulfillment, as I've had quoted at me before. It's not about self-fulfillment. It's about you doing your job raising these kids that you brought into this world. If that and a whole lot more, if that's the way children were raised, what kind of sadness could we avoid? What kind of pain could we alleviate? What kind of criminal behavior would not take place? What kind of society, rather than the breakdown in our society, would we have? That's all part of training up a child in the way it should go. Our chastisement ought to parallel that of God, and I believe that. In other words, when we talk about chastisement, we talk about what's best for the child. We talk about that being the motivation. I hope you can read that. It looks darker up there than it does on this screen, so maybe you can read it. But we talk about what's best for the child. It motivates us to make decisions, to do things we do. Not what feels good at the moment. You know, things as simple as, and I'll give you one example. I decided a long, long time ago that, not that I've been perfect in this, but if I were ever going to discipline a child or correct a child, it would not be in anger. Now, we're all human. But motivated by anger, I'm mad at this child for doing this, is not the proper motivation. That's not what motivates God. What motivates God beyond that or above that is, I love this child. I want this child to do what this child is supposed to do. So it is genuine care. It is asking the question, what will accomplish the ultimate purpose of training up the child in the way he should go? How do I best accomplish that? And I think a parent has to be concerned with that. I think some meditation and some thought has to be put into that. I believe that in some respects every child is different. And you've got to decide what is the best way to accomplish with this child, training them up in the way they should go. He or she, how do they respond? How do they react? How do they get the most out of what I'm trying to teach and what I'm trying to enforce? But it is always asking that question, what will accomplish the ultimate goal? And consistent. Not today, I don't let you get away with anything. Tomorrow, do whatever you want. It's not that. It's not that ridiculous, and you heard me talking about it a couple of weeks ago. A lot of you found that to be humorous, but you know exactly, and a lot of you know exactly what I mean, that every mistake the child is making repeatedly, one, two, and I don't know however high we're going. And then it's just totally inconsistent. I don't feel like disciplining this child today. I'm tired today. I want to do this instead today. So today, child, you fend for yourself. No, it's a consistent enforcement. It is consistently laying down rules, laws, if you will. My son, forget not my law. It's laying that down, and with complete love. The child may not understand at 2 years old exactly why they have to do so-and-so. And it's all right, I think, for the child to say why. Not belligerently. Not disrespectfully, but I think the whole part of discipline is teaching them why. But they may not understand, and they may not be able to really get it in their heads why it is so bad to run across the street for a baseball. They may not, but they will grow older and come to understand that. And they will learn that you are doing it for their good and their best. You tell them, and you know, every little child responds with the same thing. Oh, yeah, right, yeah, boy, you know. But they grow up to understand it. And here is the idea of consistently, by rules, laws, with complete love for the child and for his or her well-being. By the time a child is grown, certainly by the time they are mature, they will understand that. How many of us acted like a child with our parents, grandparents, whoever it was, did not understand it, did not want to obey the rules, only to grow older and wiser and say, boy, I know why they told me that. We understand when we get older. The child has to be taught that is the way of things to respect authority. Now, I'm going to say this. Some of you in this room came from great homes and great backgrounds. Some of you came from less, and some of you came from those that were not good at all. But regardless of where you came from, regardless of what advantages or disadvantages that you had growing up, and I think if we're honest, all of us had some advantages, and all of us had some disadvantages. It isn't as simple as saying, I came from a great home, I didn't come from a good home. It's not that simple. But regardless of whatever advantages or disadvantages you had, you can accomplish this for your child for two reasons. One, because it's natural for a parent to care for a child. I want you to stop and think for a moment. Adam and Eve, I believe, could be great parents. And they didn't come from a bad home growing up. They didn't come from a home that had a lot of advantages either or a lot of disadvantages. They came from no home. They just were put here as grown adults to be parents. But there is something natural in all of us that we have the ability to do that. It doesn't matter where you came from. And it doesn't matter what you had or you didn't have. God is saying to you, I created you in my image. I am a great parent. And you can be too. Because naturally, you are in my image. But there's something else. Being a good parent, just like anything else we do, is learned behavior. I can learn to be a good parent if I'm guided by the teaching of God.
Right.
I believe that.
Right.
We can be great parents because we have it in us to do so. God accomplishes His purpose for us through discipline and chastisement. And this is something that we should understand as His children, and therefore we're able to be better parents if we are. The passage that was read for us by Acham talks about the great misery that there is for humankind. Now, you may or may not just readily think of your life as being filled with great misery. I don't know. But what Solomon was saying there, what God is telling us through him, is that there is purpose in all of this great misery. Ultimately, if we were going to, and let's do that, let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 1, and let's look at verses 6 and 7. Because here's what God is saying. When bad things happen, when life is not as great as you would like it to be, this is one thing, at least, that is happening. And so he says in verse 6, wherein you greatly rejoice, though now for a season, or for a time, if need be, if you need be, you are in heaviness through manifold temptations. In other words, the great misery, I think, Solomon is talking about. If you need it, there is going to be some misery in life. Now notice verse 7. That the trial or the testing of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perishes, though it be tried or tested with fire, and the fire is the misery, the trouble, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ. Now, you see what he's saying? You're going to go through some misery, some pain in life. Because it's given to us, just like children, to endure it when our faith, our faith is tested or tried. You're going to go through some misery, but in the end, you are considered precious gold. In fact, more precious than gold. And God, like a great father, the great father he is refining you. He's taking, just like gold is taken with all extraneous other ores and, you know, minerals, etc., a rock. And all of that is stripped away. All the impurities are stripped away. And all you are left with is like they advertise on TV, you know, 0.9999 fine gold. God is doing that in our lives. God is taking us when we are much less than we need to be and much less than we can be. And God is refining us through all of this misery. And we have to believe that. And we have to see it through to the end and believe that it is for good. All things work together for good to those who love the Lord. In 1 Peter chapter 4, I want you to notice, if you're still in 1 Peter, turn a page over or so and notice with me verse 18. Now, this is in a context that is talking about the difficulties of living a Christian life. And one of the things he says in verse 18, if the righteous scarcely, the King James says, if the righteous scarcely be saved. You know what that word scarcely means? It means with difficulty. It means that as a righteous person, when you're right, understand, with God, that there still is going to be a lot of difficulty in God the Father getting you, the child, to where you need to be. It's going to be a lot of difficulty. And God the Father is going to be faithful, and He's going to get you there. And you got to believe that, but you also have to understand that this is all part of the process for life to not always be everything I want it to be. Take it back to the kid. You're saying to the kid, you know, sometimes you got to eat turnip greens and not just a Hershey's candy bar. I need to get you from here to here, and it requires some of these things. And you may not like it at the time. God is the perfect Father. And God always knows exactly what we need. Listen to Hebrews 12 when he's telling us that. And he's comparing it to our earthly fathers. Now notice this. Hebrews 12, go down with me to verse 9, I think. Yeah, verse 9. He says, furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh, meaning our dads here on earth, who corrected us, and we gave them reverence, respect. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto, notice this, the Father of spirits and live? You know what he's saying there is, you know what it was. You grew up with someone being in a position to say, you, Michael, need to do this. Don't hit your sister. You know, I mean, that's drilled into you, boy. You need to do this, and here's why you need to do it. Okay, I don't understand all that. Well, you will understand it. Now I'm nearly 60, and I understand it. You know? And what I understand is I have a Father in heaven. A Father who loves me, a Father who will chastise me, a Father who will drill into my head until I get it, what I need to know and what I need to be. Notice verse 10. For they truly for a few days chastised us. And I mean, relatively speaking, childhood is brief. They chastened us after their own pleasure or their own will. But He, God, always for our profit. Do I think my dad was perfect? Do I think my dad always did what he was supposed to do? No, I don't. He's a human being like every other human being. Do I think God the Father is perfect? Yes, I do. Who always knows exactly. Who is helping me, notice this phrase, that we might be partakers of His, God's, holiness. He's teaching us to be in His image. Now, no chastening for the present. Seems to be joyous, but it's grievous. Notice God is telling you, I understand. It feels bad. I know that. I know it hurts. Nevertheless, afterwards, after it's done, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them that are exercised thereby. Now, you know, you can be a kid and get to a certain age where you're tired of the rules and the laws. You can do that. And you can pack up and run away. And you can get out of that whole situation. You will suffer for that. But you can get out of it. You know? And I mean by that, you know, and understand, this is coming from somebody who left home like that. But at some point, you know, if you think you are going to run out on a bad situation and get into no situation with no guidance and do exactly what you please, you're going to pay that price. You know, at some point you have to mature enough to realize, you know what? I'm going to have to submit to laws and rules the rest of my life. And there just isn't any way around that. Well, God is saying to me, I'm a perfect father. I tell you what's right for your own good. It may not feel good right now. Do what I say, because afterwards you will realize how good that it was for you. Let's ask a question, though. Why do bad things happen? I mean, when life is going rough and miserable, why do they happen? You know, truthfully, they happen for all kinds of reasons that may or may not be because you're doing wrong. Bad things are a natural part of life, and they happen for all kinds of reasons. I mean, it can be judgment. It can be punishment or chastisement. It can be for that. But it can also be for the exact opposite. You may be doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing, and somebody doesn't like that, so they persecute you for it. That's why bad things happen sometimes. Sometimes it's just the natural order of things. You know, ever since Adam and Eve sinned, there have been some consequences in this world. And they're not all good. They're thorns and thistles and pain and suffering and so forth. And God said that. And it's just the natural order of things. Circumstances. There can even be hazards. You know, one of the first things I had to face as a Christian, I mean, I hadn't been a Christian, I guess, a year. And a gospel preacher in Alabama was going to do a gospel meeting. In other words, he was on his way to preach at a church that night, and somebody ran a red light, and he died. And you know, you have to face that. I mean, how is it that a preacher going to do exactly what he's supposed to be doing dies like that? Well, that's part of life. You can even be hurt or die just for doing the right thing. And we all understand that. So, beyond that, there are trials that God gives, not to punish us, but to strengthen us. I don't know that the Bible ever says anywhere, Abraham did wrong, so God said, go sacrifice your son. No, the Bible said just the opposite. This was a test. He was faithful. And God said, well, let's see how strong, how faithful he can be and will be. And those are life-changing events when you are willing to go through that. We can't always say we're being punished or chastised by God because we've done something wrong. But, and here's the big but, our caveat to that. But, we ought to always question and self-examine. TJ was talking about that up here at the Lord's table. We ought to examine. We ought to look at ourselves. Something bad is going on in my life. Why is it going on? It may be for any of those reasons or any combination of those reasons that I just listed. But I ought to ask the question. Am I knowingly doing wrong that I need to change? In other words, let's be honest about it. Michael, you've been lying a lot lately. God knows that. And God is saying to you, I don't accept that. I won't accept that out of you. You have to change that. And maybe some circumstances come. They may or may not come because God said, you're going to suffer now for lying. But should I stop and think about my life and say, you know what? I don't know if this is happening because I've been lying, but let's be honest, I've been lying. And it needs to change. You see, when we do that kind of soul searching, it may not be that God is beating on us, as sometimes people will say. But if I do the soul searching and I correct something before he starts, you know, it's a good thing. In other words, if I stop doing something I know that's wrong, or I start doing something I know I need to be doing. But isn't that what we do as kids when we grow up? The more mature we are, we get to the point where mom doesn't have to come into the room and say, don't do this today. Or do this right now. You know what? You go out there, you've lived by that law, it's been enforced. You've learned it. It's learned behavior. You don't do it today because you just are not supposed to do it. Or, you know, pick up your toys. Pick up your toys. It gets to a point where you just clean your room. Make your bed. Why? Because you don't need them telling you for the 2,000th time to brush your teeth or whatever it might be. You just know it needs to be done. So you do it. That's what God is saying to us. And I'm telling you, I'll close with this. And this comes from someone who, part of my childhood, I had all that I'm talking about this morning. And part of my childhood, because of circumstances that were beyond my control, I didn't have all that. And I know both sides of it. And I know what it's like to live a life that results from both sides of a good home, well-disciplined, etc., and to live in a time when you just don't have all of that. And so I say this. It will be easier for your child. You love them. Anna's standing back there with the baby. Several of you have them in this room. Several of you are contemplating having them. It will be so much easier for that child if they come from a properly disciplined background. The kind of home that God says, this is what you need to have. It will be so much easier for that child to do what's right, regardless of how much, pardon me, it will be so much easier for that child if they had what God says they should have. It will be so much easier. And I can't stress enough to you how much love you have for your child if you take that time to do what you're supposed to do. You've got a short window of time. You'll have to make some sacrifices. It'll cost you some time. It may cost you some money. It may cost you some pleasure. It may cost you things you would have otherwise done, and you may never get them back, but here is what you'll get. A child that will love you. A child that will know what you did and be grateful to you for the rest of their life. If you're here this morning and you're not a child of God, you believe Jesus is the Son of God. This morning you're willing to make that confession, change your life, and do what you're supposed to do. If you'll be baptized, your sins will be washed away. And it might be that you're here this morning and you've been baptized, but you know your life needs a renew, a restart. You need to recommit. You have that right as a Christian to always come to God. He's your Father. He loves you. Won't you please come?